So what exactly do these new isolationists of the right, what would they want us to do if China said, you know what, Taiwan is part of China, we're taking it over, we're going to crush freedom just like we did in Hong Kong? Okay, we got a lot of problems in America. When did America not have a lot of problems? We could have said that about Hitler. By the way, there were Americans who did say it. Hitler's not our business. So there's always been that strain, but now it is more powerful and it is depressing. That's more depressing to me than the left. If there's a strain among my fellow conservatives of isolationism, screw the world, only America matters, that's what they're saying. I have no relationship morally, Judaically, Christianly, biblically, morally to that notion. And by the way, it's also wrong, forget the moral, it's also wrong from an American standpoint. You really think the world could go to pot and it won't affect the United States? You really do believe that?
Of course, there are many issues facing people around the world, and the US only has limited resources. It's a very powerful country at the same time. So you can't intervene in every single situation. And you mentioned Hitler there, obviously. Again, not every single situation going on outside of the United States, some conflict or something, is analogous to what Hitler was doing in the Second
Correct.
World War. So
I've never met the person who believed that America should intervene in every problem in the world. Absolutely. That person doesn't exist. So it's what do they call it when you make up somebody? Straw man. It's a straw man argument.
Absolutely. But I just wanted to quote from the Calvin Coolidge Project today. Speaker Mike Johnson's proposal for the spending bill includes $0 directed towards the southern border. However, there are $61 billion for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel, $8 billion.
But it's not a however.
For
the however is absurd.
But let me put it to you this. There's an opportunity cost in every single dollar that the United States taxpayer spends. It could be spent on X or it could be spent on Y. So I suppose, and you've got a $34 trillion debt. So you're not, you know, America is obviously very rich, but there are economic problems and so on.
Our poverty is not due to helping allies combat aggression. Okay, let's say we gave nothing to any other country on earth. And by the way, I think we should reduce the foreign aid issue because all we do is, in many cases, aid corrupt regimes. But nevertheless, let us say we gave nothing. It would have a tiny dent on the debt. Our debt is because of a staggering, gigantic government giving massive benefits to Americans in the trillions of dollars to buy votes.
Hello and welcome to GB News America. My name is Stephen Edgington. Death to America were the chants heard recently in Dearborn, Michigan by pro-Hamas activists. To discuss the rising anti-America movement within the United States, I'm joined by the talk show host and founder of PragerU, Dennis Prager. Why do people hate America?
As a rule, people hate those who are more successful. And it's important to note, I don't mean financially only. Otherwise, people would hate Saudi Arabia. People would hate Switzerland. There are many, many financially successful places in the world, and they're not hated. America is hated because it's been successful in almost every arena. By the way, note the past tense. America is currently strongly going downhill, which is a worldwide tragedy, not just an American tragedy, but my greater commitment is to truth and to cheerleading. So I have to tell the truth. It can fail. This unique experiment in liberty can fail. The country that most people who wanted to leave their country wanted to go to has been America. They'd be happy to go to Switzerland, perhaps, not happy to go to Saudi Arabia. Yet it is America. I mean, when people dream about moving from the third world, it has been historically the United States. I point out all the time, and if you went to Harvard, you don't know this, that there are far more black Africans have come to the United States voluntarily through emigration than came involuntarily through slavery. I think it is at least 10 times the number. And again, I don't think there are 150 college students in America who know that. Because you don't learn anything in college and you don't learn anything in high school. You only learn that Jefferson had slaves. That's what you learn. But that that's the hatred of Israel. If Israel were a failure, the Arab countries would not hate it nearly as much. It is that they made Tel Aviv from a malarial swamp into one of the most dynamic places on earth, socially, technologically, scientifically, culturally, and the same exact area is a failure in all of the surrounding countries and among the Palestinians. As Douglas Murray has pointed out frequently, Gaza could have been Singapore, but they decided to use billions of dollars to build tunnels to murder Jews. And it's so the hatred of this, you really began with an important question. I'm sorry to take so long, but it is so important to understand this. If America were rich and despicable, it wouldn't be nearly as hated. The bad hate the good. The failures hate the successful. These are rules of life. One final example, because I believe that the Bible is the most wise series of books ever written. Shakespeare is second, for the record. I'm not saying that because you're a Brit. I'm saying it because it's true. But the Bible has a phenomenal story. Isaac, in Genesis, he is a successful man. He has dug very successful wells. So the Philistines, ironically, the Philistines come along and they see how successful Isaac is. So what do they do? They have two choices. Do we learn how to dig wells and get wealthy ourselves, or do we destroy his wells? They destroyed his wells. That story is 3,000 years old. I am convinced God has Groundhog Day every day. The human species repeats the same bloody errors every generation, and that's one of them. You have a choice. Do you learn how to be successful, or do you learn to destroy the successful?
Let me give you the alternative view of America. America was founded in 1619 on the basis of slavery. It has dominated millions of people. It has oppressed minorities since its very beginning. It has gone around the world and imposed its values on countries that do not want them imposed upon themselves. It has destroyed other people's sovereignties. It is an evil empire made up of capitalists who exploit the minorities and the poor of the world. How do you respond?
I think that's all you need to know about the left to know how broken their moral compass is. So had there not been a United States, what good would have happened on Earth? Would there have been less slavery? No. The vast majority of slaves were either in the Arab world or sent to South America. Had nothing to do with the United States. 300-something thousand blacks in total were sent to the United States on slave ships. Horror, but we nevertheless need to tell the truth. So tell me one evil on earth that would not have existed if they weren't in America. Then I can tell you all the good that wouldn't have been. And by the way, we're seeing it now. The completely feckless and weak Democratic administration in the United States, Biden is irrelevant. It is Democrats. Biden is of no interest to me. If Biden fell off the earth tomorrow, there would be no change. The Democratic Party has been taken over by the left. The left does not want to be a force, have America as a force for good in the world. As a result, I asked one of the greatest living historians, Niall Ferguson, who's a Brit, and I had no idea what he would answer. Formerly of Harvard, now at the Stanford Institution, Hoover Institution at Stanford. I had him on my show about 2 years ago, and I said, Professor Ferguson, and I had no idea. I normally know what people I interview will answer, but I had no idea. Do you think that Putin would have invaded Ukraine if Trump were president? And I don't know that he's a Trump supporter, and I have no idea if he is, frankly. I suspect he's not, but I don't know. And he said no. There was no thought, period of thought, and I agree with him. I don't believe that the Palestinians would have massacred Israelis if Trump were president. I don't believe Putin would have invaded Ukraine. Certainly, Afghanistan would not be the butcher house that it is now of its own people, and where women are arrested or tortured for going to school, girls are. America, when it is strong, has been the greatest force for good on planet Earth. And the left loathes the good. That's why they loathe Israel. They loathe the good. Everything the left touches, it destroys, is one of the ways of understanding modern human life. I'm not talking liberals. Liberals vote left, but they're not leftists. They make leftism possible because they vote for them. That's a separate issue entirely, though. So everything you described is a lie. The United States has been the greatest force for good, and it has certainly not only done good. Is there an individual that has only done good? Of course not. So how could a country only do good? It's composed of so many individuals. But the balance sheet of America has been infinitely greater good. America bailed out Europe during World War II and after World War II with our reconstruction of Europe, and properly so, I might add. But what do people who go to university learn?
Let's talk about those Muslims who hate America. Recently, we saw chants of death to America. This isn't a new phenomenon. But certainly, they would criticize the United States for going into the Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan. They would criticize, they would say, you know, you murdered tens of thousands of civilians, you caused terrible destruction on our countries, you shouldn't be there, you're a colonizing state. And also the kind of Islamic view probably of America is that you're sinful, you know, obviously you're not a Muslim country and you should be signing up to their religion and so on. So how do you respond to this kind of Islamic anti-American strain that currently seems to be taking hold of certain parts of the United States?
Well, like the left, it's identical. Anti-Americanism is an ideology of the morally troubled, I'll be very kind in my language, and the weak, the loser, okay? Anti-Americanism and anti-Semitism are ideologies of losers. There is to take the Jewish example, and I have a book on it called Why the Jews. It's in its third edition. I taught Jewish history at Brooklyn College, City University of New York, my first job. I know a lot about this. There is no example of anti-Semites who were good people. Bad people hate Jews. Bad people hate America. Okay, that's pretty much the way it works. Bad people hate Britain. But the same people who hate America hate Britain. It's not like, oh, Britain's beautiful, but America's disgusting. They don't have that at all. You in Britain, I don't even talk about not surviving. I think Britain's, if one were to bet at Vegas on the survival of a great society, and Britain is a great society with all its flaws, I would bet on America sooner than Britain, because we don't have nearly the same percentage of people who have the opposite values of our society. Our immigrants come from Latin America overwhelmingly. Your immigrants come from the Middle East, who share none of your values. None. None. N-O-N-E. So it tells you far more about the Muslims who hate America than it does about America.
Are you concerned about those chants, death to America? And do you think there is a rising issue of Islamic extremism in the United States? We've seen in Britain and Europe and other countries in Western Europe, definitely a huge strain of this, and we've been experiencing that for at least 20 years now. But obviously people say the US is kind of further behind that track in a way. However, there are some like Ayaan Hirsi Ali, actually the wife of Niall Ferguson, who you mentioned earlier. She would say, actually, there is a problem in the United States, and these videos are serious. You've got these Somali population in Minnesota. You've got people from the Middle East and other countries coming to the United States in greater numbers. So do you think that this is a rising problem?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. We're a little behind Britain. The Democratic Party, which was once the party that loved America and loved Israel, is now the party that is ruining America and alienated from Israel. They almost always go in tandem. So they care about votes. They don't care about anything nearly as much as power. That's always been true for the left since Lenin. And so it bothers them that Muslims who hate America will not vote Democrat, but they will. That's the joke, because they really know that the Republicans are far more pro-Israel than the Democrats. So with all their threats not to vote for Biden, if Biden is the nominee, and I'm not sure that will be, he may simply retire. But it doesn't matter. The Democratic Party is the same with or without Biden.
You've talked a lot about Israel in this interview, and obviously, maybe in your mind, Israel and America are kind of connected in terms of the themes of what I've been asking about. And I just wondered whether you think that race comes into this. So Israel is obviously a majority white country, so is the United States. Maybe that's changing slowly in the demographics. Certainly it is in Britain. But do you think that the left view these nations through the lens of race? You've got these kind of white dominant nations oppressing the brown and the black minorities. Is that where their hatred partly comes from?
Well, first of all, just factually, I don't know that Israel is majority white. I don't. Certainly. The Sephardi population, I think, is about 50% of the population. Increasing number of black Jews who came from Ethiopia are there. If you have a picture of a typical, let's say, IDF platoon, and the same number, same age of Palestinians, be very hard-pressed in many cases to know who are the Palestinians and who are the Israelis.
Put it like this, the impression...
You're
is
right,
that
no, but no. I just wanted, that's why I said, I You're just right wanted to make
me.
A factual
yeah, yeah.
statement.
Absolutely.
Yes, what the left has done, I've spoken about this literally all of my adult life. This is not new. Judeo-Christian values speak in terms of good and evil. The left loathes Judeo-Christian values, and they don't think in terms of good and evil. They think in terms of black and white, race. They think in terms of male and female, gender, as they call it. They think in terms of Marxist terms of rich and poor. So, and a fourth criterion, strong and weak. Not good and evil. The weak are by definition correct, and the strong are incorrect. The non-white is by definition correct. I was taught when I was at Columbia University in the 1970s, I was taught, and it is repeated constantly, a black cannot be racist. That is a leftist credo, like the Trinity is for the Christian. I believe, says the leftist, I know a black cannot be racist. And so they divide the world in four ways, having nothing to do with who is morally right. There is a verse, again, I always use the Bible because if people don't understand that the issue is Judeo-Christian, and the term is perfectly apt, they're the only two religions that share a Bible. That's a pretty big deal. They both share the Old Testament, which is 2/3 of the Christian Bible. So I use it regularly. There is a law in the book of Exodus, you cannot favor a poor man in a courtroom. That, in and of itself, undoes the entire edifice of left-wing thinking. Of course you favor the poor man. That's we don't divide the world between just and unjust. That's why they call it social justice, not justice. They almost never speak about justice, environmental justice, economic justice, gender justice, racial justice, social justice. By the way, anytime you add an adjective to those terms, you have undone it. Like people's democracy has nothing to do with democracy. And so too, social justice has nothing to do with justice.
Let's talk about American foreign policy. Do you think the world needs a policeman?
Yeah, I wrote people can see I have literally a thousand columns on the internet. And yes, I wrote one column, the world needs a policeman. If your society needs a policeman, why wouldn't the world need a policeman? It makes no sense. Are there no bad people in the world, or no bad countries, no bad actors? So if the United States is not the policeman, who will be? The United Nations? Russia? China? Belgium? The European Union? Who will be the policeman? Since there has to be a policeman. So your choice is the United States or some other alternative. What would do a better job?
Why is it the United States' role to do that? And isn't it more important that the US focuses on domestic priorities? Let's say the southern border might be one, or your massive drug epidemic that you're currently experiencing. This is certainly the argument from many Republicans, Tucker Carlson.
It is, and it's very disconcerting that they have dropped the notion of America is blessed with its affluence and power, but should only use it for itself. This is the conservative refusal to live by Judeo-Christian values. You have a moral obligation if you are stronger and richer. You have an obligation to the world. I have defended America all of my life, but I am America first, and I think you should be Britain first, and a Swede should be Sweden first, and a Ghanaian Ghana first. But there's a big difference between America first and America only. We now have a rising group of frightening people on the right who believe in America only. Anyone who believes that the weakness of America emanates from having some degree of moral obligation to the world doesn't know what they're talking about. Our problem with the border has nothing to do with helping Israel. Nothing. But by the way, just for the record again, the United States gives billions of dollars of weaponry to Israel, but Israel pays for it. A lot of people don't know that. It's really, it gives the money to Israel, and Israel then pays for these arms. So it's good for America, and it's good for Israel. But in any event, what about Taiwan? Let us say China, forget Israel, because that raises a lot of emotions, because it's a Jewish state. Taiwan is not a Jewish state. So what exactly do these new isolationists of the right, what would they want us to do if China said, you know what, Taiwan is part of China, we're taking it over, we're going to crush freedom just like we did in Hong Kong? Okay, we got a lot of problems in America. When did America not have a lot of problems? We could have said that about Hitler. By the way, there were Americans who did say it. Hitler's not our business. So there's always been that strain, but now it is more powerful and it is depressing. That's more depressing to me than the left. If there's a strain among my fellow conservatives of isolationism, screw the world, only America matters, that's what they're saying. I have no relationship morally, Judaically, Christianly, biblically, morally, to that notion. And by the way, it's also wrong, forget the moral, it's also wrong from an American standpoint. You really think the world could go to pot and it won't affect the United States? You really do believe that?
Of course, there are many issues facing people around the world, and the US only has limited resources. It's a very powerful country at the same time. So you can't intervene in every single situation. And you mentioned Hitler there, obviously. Again, not every single situation going on outside of the United States, some conflict or something, is analogous to what Hitler was doing in the Second
Correct.
World War. So
no, nobody, I've never met the person who believed that America should intervene in every problem in the world.
Absolutely.
That person doesn't exist. So it's what do they call it when you make up somebody? Straw man. It's a straw man argument.
Absolutely. But I just wanted to quote from the Calvin Coolidge project today. Speaker Mike Johnson's proposal for the spending bill includes $0 directed towards the southern border. However, there are $61 billion for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel, $8 billion.
But it's not a however.
For
the however is absurd.
But let me put it to you this. There's an opportunity cost in every single dollar that the United States taxpayer spends. It could be spent on X or it could be spent on Y. So I suppose, and you've got a $34 trillion debt. So you're not, you know, America is obviously very rich, but there are economic problems and so on.
Our poverty is not due to helping allies combat aggression. Okay, let's say we gave nothing to any other country on earth. And by the way, I think we should reduce the foreign aid issue because all we do is, in many cases, aid corrupt regimes. But nevertheless, let us say we gave nothing. It would have a tiny dent on the debt. Our debt is because of a staggering, gigantic government giving massive benefits to Americans in the trillions of dollars to buy votes. This is the calamity that is inherent. Churchill and others pointed it out. Democracy only works if you have a, and this was pointed out by Benjamin Franklin. It's a republic, ma'am, as he said to one woman, if you can keep it. Getting Americans hooked on benefits, these are the gigantic expenditures. The government is the gigantic expense, not foreign aid. And I acknowledge that we should reduce foreign aid. If we gave Israel nothing, what dent would it have on the border? That's why the however was bizarre. The however, it's not related. It's not like if we don't give Israel any money, then we'll take care of the border. The Democrats don't want to take care of the border. It has nothing to do with the Middle East. It has nothing to do with any other country.
In this very specific example of Mike Johnson, I suppose the argument could be that he has the power as Speaker to negotiate with the Democrats. And he could say, listen, we'll support this bill to help Israel and to help Ukraine if you give us something on the border in return. And I suppose that could be the argument as to why the
two
issues
do it.
Are linked.
They want an open border. The left wants to destroy America as we know it. That Republicans don't understand this. And why did I understand this since I was a graduate student in the 70s? The left hates good countries. Not that liberals love good countries, but liberals vote for the people who hate it. It has to be repeated over and over because liberals go, I don't hate America. I know you don't. The left does. So I don't think there is a single bill that the Republicans could come up with which would, the Democrats would say, okay, yeah, we'll build a wall. We'll build a wall on the southern border. You know where there's a wall being built right now? Between the Dominican Republic and Haiti. Is anybody attacking the Dominican Republic? Nobody gives a damn about the Dominican Republic. I'm not saying they shouldn't, but that's a fact. But they're building a wall. They're not being attacked because they understand it works. By the way, Israel, I don't understand why Israel didn't have a border wall or barrier next to Gaza like they've had on the West Bank. This is not anything you asked me about and probably won't, but I just have to say it. Some heads in Israel have to roll for October 7th, or Israel is not a truly functioning republic or democracy. I mean, it is indefensible what happened to Israel on October 7th, not just morally because of the Gaza Nazis, and they are the first group I've ever called Nazis in my life. And the only difference between Hamas and Nazis is that Nazis hid their atrocities and Hamas publicizes them.
We will talk about Israel, by the way, but I just wanted to stick on this issue of the United States to begin with. I mentioned Calvin Coolidge. It was the Calvin Coolidge Project I was quoting from. He obviously was the president in the early
1920s. I love Calvin Coolidge. He's one of my favorite five presidents.
I'm glad you say that. So I want to talk about some of his legacies, I suppose, and perhaps contrast them with today, with what you're saying.
That if the less the government did, the better. I couldn't agree more.
So in the 1920s, America was an isolationist state. Immigration was fairly restricted. And as you say, he was very, very tight with spending. He saw deficits as morally wrong. And he was very good at sort of counting the pennies, as it were. Do you not think we should apply those same rules today, including the isolationism, by the way, where America wasn't going around and interfering or intervening in international affairs? Because America was strong in the 1920s, it was very successful, the economy was booming, society was doing very well. So do you see any contradiction in your support?
There was no Hitler, and there was no Mussolini, and there was no Tojo.
But do you think there's a Hitler and a Mussolini today? Do you see what I mean?
Well, I believe that the pro-Hamas parts of the left and the Arab and Muslim world, Iran would come. Iran has acknowledged its raison d'etre is the extermination of Israel. So you have a choice. I don't know what Calvin Coolidge would have said. I really don't know. Would Calvin Coolidge, if he were alive today, said, I don't care what happens to Israel. If the Iranians succeed in destroying all the Jews of Israel, that's a sad thing, but hey, I'm American, I don't give a damn. Or would he have not said, I don't know, and neither do those who of the Calvin Coolidge Project, of which I am learning now. I don't know what he would have said. I can tell you that the 1920s were the roaring 20s. It was a relatively happy era until the Depression, and there was nothing around the world calling for American intervention like happened later. You can be isolationist when there's nothing to be isolated from. So there is a free and prosperous Germany and a free and prosperous Japan because American troops are there. Generally speaking, Iraq may well be a major exception. I fully acknowledge that. And that's because it's an Arab country, and Arab countries are not fans of freedom. That's not anti-Arab. It's either true or false. You see, the left never asks, is it true or false? They ask, does it hurt anybody's feelings? Okay? Most observers, like David Price Jones, who's lived much of his life in the Middle East, closed circle, people should read the book. Saddam was admired in the Arab world. Whether America should have gone in there or not is a very fair question. But it does say something about the Arab world that Saddam, who butchered his own people, who tortured members of the Iraqi Olympic team who didn't win medals, that he was admired, does say something about that world.
Just very briefly on this period, I'm just fascinated to hear your answer. Do you think that America should have gone into the First World War? And just talking about the 1920s again, you're really racking my history here. I'm trying to remember if there are any wars or conflicts going on. Definitely in the early 1920s, there was the Russian Civil War. I think there was events going on in the Ottoman Empire as well, which Britain almost got involved with.
The West did get involved in the Russian Civil War. So did the United States. And it is a very interesting question that every isolationist should ask. If America and Britain had succeeded in overthrowing Lenin, and thereby, let's be clear here, because this is my field of study, communist countries, which I visited a great deal, I learned Russian. So let's play history through. No Lenin, no Communist Party of the Soviet Union, no Stalin. No Communist Party of the Soviet Union and no Stalin, no Mao. No Kim Il-jung or Kim Sung-il, the first Kim of the three generations. So All of Korea would be free. Look at how prosperous South Korea is. And there would have been no World War II. And there would have been no 40 million butchered in the Soviet Union, no genocide, and it's one of the few times I use the term, in Ukraine, and no 60 million killed by Mao through starvation in the Great Leap Forward in the 1950s. Had we succeeded in simply suppressing the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, would that have been worth it? I'd like all isolationists to answer that question, just as I have to answer, you, if you will, Libya and Iraq. These are totally legitimate questions. But you have to answer, what if we had intervened, let's say, in the Soviet Union, no Soviet Union?
And it's interesting, you talk about Libya and Iraq as perhaps two failures of American foreign policy, or they're certainly seen as that, interventions. You also mentioned Iran as being a kind of Hitlerian state, obviously wants to destroy Israel, destroy the Jews. Does that mean that you would advocate for war with Iran?
Yeah, I actually, I would advocate for that, because the you could stop something before tremendous horrors take place.
So would that be a preventative strike?
Clearly. I mean, it certainly declared war on Israel already, I mean, physically, but it declared war. I mean, I don't think we need, if you asked me, would I be in favor of it? If that were our only choice, I think we could weaken that regime, and Donald Trump did. The Democrats have strengthened that regime with billions of dollars, from Barack Obama to Joe Biden. We who loathe that regime are challenged, well, do you want to make a war, as you correctly challenged me? Okay, well, we challenge the left. Wait, you want to make them stronger? And how exactly is this helping the United States? Or world peace? I mean, do we have an interest in world peace? The true isolationist doesn't give a damn. So long as New York and San Francisco aren't touched, let the world blow itself up.
So when you see these interventions into the Middle East, into Iraq, good example, getting rid of Saddam Hussein, do you not think that that is a warning for America as to what could happen when you remove a dictator? There is simply chaos, civil war, destruction.
It's an absolute warning. That is correct.
So why wouldn't you take that warning and apply it to Iran?
Because the Iranian people are not the Iraqi people. I happen to know the area. First of all, the Iranians, of course, are not Arab, and the Iraqis are. You will find this of interest. I hope somebody can dig this up. I was on Hardball, this famous American left-wing show with Chris Matthews, and he had me on at that time. So I don't know if it's available on the internet. And he asked me if I was advocating for us to go into Iraq, because you know I was a supporter of George W. Bush, and I was generally a hardliner on these matters. And I said, I said, no, I'm not advocating that we go into Iraq. And he was shocked. I remember his shock. And the reason was I suspected that nothing good is going to come out of there. And I told this story on my radio show in the 80s. When I was in my 20s in the 70s, I visited Syria. I was on a bus from Beirut to Damascus, alone. And I was sitting next to an Iraqi. And I said to him, he spoke perfect English. So I said to him, and I've told this story all of my life, I said, I often do this with people. It's a fun question to ask people from any country. Could you summarize your country in a couple of sentences or in one sentence? And he looked at me and said, easy. Iraqis are the most barbaric people in the world. And he was an Iraqi. And that stayed with me. Obviously, I remember this so many years later, and I've always told that story. I did not believe that getting rid of Saddam was going to produce a bunch of Iraqi Thomas Jeffersons. So I fully acknowledge that, and I hope that lessons are learned. But it is sort of like saying, you know how many people are killed in American hospitals? It's hundreds of thousands, I think. I think it's hundreds of thousands of infections that they get in the hospital and so on. Does that mean we close hospitals? People would think you're an idiot. The fact that mistakes are made, and even expensive mistakes in life, doesn't mean that you draw the wrong lesson. You have to draw the right lessons.
Just going back to this issue of America, I just want to read this quote because I think it's a really funny quote from Bismarck. The Americans are a very lucky people. They're bordered north and south by weak neighbors and to the east and west by fish. Now, again, this argument is that from the Tucker Carlsons of this world, America should be an autarky. America should focus on itself. America should put America first. I want to ask again, do you think that it's important that America focuses more on its domestic priorities rather than, say, going to war with Iran? Just as an example.
Of course. But more doesn't mean only. Okay. I said America first is not America only. America has not been blessed with its power in order not to use any of it.
Let's talk about something you mentioned.
By the way, again, I'm not advocating war with Iran. You asked me, I don't remember the exact wording of your question, and I try to make it clear. There are many ways short of war to weaken that regime. But in the final analysis, if it only came to a preemptive strike to end a nuclear Iran, which would engulf a good part of the world in mass death and massive war, not just with Israel, I mean, with the Sunni Arab regimes. I mean, so unless you say, so what? It's not happening to the fish on the two coasts of America. But I don't know, again, the conservative isolationist who is an atheist has some argument. The conservative American isolationist who claims to be Christian and still believes we have no moral obligation being the strongest country on earth, that puzzles me.
But is that not a straw man itself? Because as we've been talking about this interview, it's nuanced. There are many issues around the world that America can get involved with, and it's basically a decision on a case-by-case basis as to whether
correct.
It's important.
Correct. We all agree on that.
But you're saying that there's this perspective that they have no moral ideas.
Well, that's what they're saying. That's what an isolationist is saying. It's not a straw man. Right. Then if you interview them, ask them, is there any time, Taiwan, Israel, is there any time you would believe? By the way, Israel is not asking for an American troop. It never did. It doesn't want one American soldier on its soil. It will fight its wars. And by the way, who developed the Iron Dome, which is a massive help to the United States?
I'd have to get an isolationist on to ask them if they'd intervene in no situations, but I don't know the answer to that. I do want to ask about Tucker Carlson, though. Obviously, he's interviewed a Palestinian Christian recently who is criticizing Israel's actions against Christians in Palestine. How do you respond? I don't know if you saw the interview or not, but how...
I didn't. I need to.
It's probably worth watching, yeah.
Absolutely. I've just been overwhelmed and I intend to watch it, but go ahead. I know about it, obviously.
Do you think that there is an issue where American conservatives turn a blind eye to issues in terms of Christians in the Middle East, in terms of persecution from Israel?
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about. First of all, Bethlehem is not in Israel. Bethlehem is
Palestine, I should say.
Well, okay, if your Christian cares about Christians outside of the United States, let's go, we'll talk about the Middle East, then we'll go elsewhere. The Palestinian population of Christians has been reduced massively because they are loathed and persecuted. Christians in Israel love being in Israel. They love it. So by the way, so do Muslims in Israel. There are 2 million Muslims. 20% of Israel is Muslim Arab, is, if you will, Palestinian. They love it there. They're the freest, happiest Muslims in the Middle East. The Christians in Israel do unbelievably well, and they should do unbelievably well. If you care about Christians, you should care about Christians in the Muslim world. But so if you have a Palestinian Christian on, what is he going to say? You know what? We really have it bad. I mean, first of all, the notion that the one Christian from the Middle East you will have on is a Palestinian. What does he have on any of the Israeli Christians who will give the opposite? If he does that, then at least he's fair. If he doesn't do that, then he has an agenda to crap on Israel. And that doesn't speak well for Tucker, who had done a PragerU interview. I've been on the show a number of times. I think he's so right on so many issues. But that is disturbing, because that's revealing of one's moral compass. If you just want to smear the name of Israel and the Jews of Israel, that's really what that would be. Why doesn't he have on... And not just he's symbolic. I, a Jew, have talked more about the massacre of Christians in West Africa than any Christian podcaster I am aware of. I'm aware of. There may be others who do. Certainly with the same name recognition that I have, zero. This is why it's a giveaway. And it's a bad giveaway if I'm right. I hope I'm wrong about Tucker on this. But to have the only person you have about Christian persecution on is a Palestinian Christian to crap on Jews is not a good sign when the real suffering of Christians is at Muslim hands. 70,000 black Christians have been massacred by Muslims in West Africa since 2000, in the last 24 years. Have any of them been on the show? Does anybody even know about it? How many churches are talking about it? You know why nobody gives a damn? Because they're killed by Muslims, and they're killed by blacks, and they're not killed by Jews.
I have to say, to my shame, I didn't know that.
To your great credit, you're acknowledging it. 70,000. And by the way, it includes massive rape, massive kidnapping of children. I mean, all the atrocities that you know about of October 7th, nearly every one of those has been part of what Muslims... Boko Haram is the name of the group, the biggest group, which means Western culture should be banned.
So do you believe there is a rising strain of anti-Semitism, not just anti-Israel sentiment, but anti-Semitism on the right? And I want to ask a kind of connected question, I suppose. Candice Owens was recently fired or... left the Daily Wire, I should put it more accurately. We don't actually know what the whole situation was, but I think people suspect strongly that it was to do with her views on Israel and her kind of criticisms of Israel. Do you think that that was the right decision? So it was that. There's sort of two questions there.
I think it was right for both Candice and for the Daily Wire. I mean, the tension was simply too great, and she didn't benefit, and Daily Wire did benefit at that point. Let me just say this on behalf of Daily Wire. Jeremy Boring, who is a Christian and who runs it, Ben Shapiro is the Daily Wire, in effect, what I am to PragerU. I don't know what the word would be, but Jeremy Boring is a former Christian pastor. He's a deeply committed Christian, and I can say, because I know him well, I don't know a better human being than Jeremy. I know people who reach his level, not many, but I don't know of he has massive moral integrity and massive intelligence. If he felt that Candice was no longer representative of the Judeo-Christian values he believes in as a Christian pastor, I take that very seriously. Everybody focuses on Ben because Ben's the Jew, and I totally understand that. Candice has invited me on her show. I have said yes, and so we'll see if that materializes now that she has left the Daily Wire. But to your larger question, I have been told by people, watch out, there is a rising strain of anti-Jewish sentiment on the right. Being on the right, I obviously have not wanted to believe it. I think that there is. I don't know how big it is. I don't know how many of the comments on Twitter or X, I don't know how many of the comments are representative or just people who have nothing better to do than write hate-filled comments about the Jews. But I will tell you this, there is no better indication. This is maybe the most important thing I can say to you in this interview. There is no more accurate, no better indication of a society in decline than anti-Semitism. Even if you don't like Jews, you should be opposed to anti-Semitism. I know that sounds funny, but it's meant utterly seriously. If you only love America, you should worry about anti-Semitism, whatever your feelings about Jews. And by the way, there are a lot of Jews I can't stand. I loathe anti-Semitism. I loathe anti-Zionism, which is indistinguishable. You can't say, oh, I have nothing against the Jews, but the Jewish state should be destroyed. It's like saying, I have nothing against Italians, but Italy should be destroyed. Nobody would take that seriously. There are 200 and something countries, 200 plus countries on earth. Only one is targeted for extinction. It's the only Jewish state in the world. And I'm supposed to believe that if anti-Zionism, which means anti-Israel's right to exist, has nothing to do with its being Jewish, please, you know, don't sell me ice in a blizzard. You can fool yourself, but you can't fool people who take it seriously. But there is no greater indication of the decline of a civilization. Germany was a great country, and then Hitler and the Nazis, with the central tenet was Jew hatred. That was more important to them than winning World War II was murdering Jews. There is no hatred like Jew hatred. It's the only one that is annihilationist. It's the only one. There are a lot of, the Irish and the English don't like each other, the Poles and the Russians don't like each other, but none of them are, nobody wants to annihilate Ireland. Nobody wants to annihilate Britain. Nobody wants to annihilate Russia or Poland. Well, maybe Hitler did, but not the Russians. And yet with Jews, that's the raison d'etre, the reason for being of the Iranian regime. They admit it, our greatest goal is to exterminate Israel.
But the irony is that the left accuse Israel of being genocidal against the Palestinians.
Why is that an irony?
Well, because you say that the anti-Jew hatred is the only hatred where people want to be genocidal and annihilating the Jews. But the accusation is actually put onto the Jews in Israel, where they're told that they are being genocidal against the Palestinians. And I do want to ask very briefly, and I've got so many more questions, but I do want to ask about the recent war in Gaza. Let's talk about...
By the way, I just want to just say, the left loathes Israel and the left loathes America. The left loathes what's good. Okay, the left is evil. Liberals are not evil, but and not every leftist individually. That's not my interest, every individual. The left cumulatively is evil. It is destroying the United States, and it supports those who wish to exterminate Israel. Other than that, they're terrific. But by the way, I'm kidding, because there's a lot of others. Like, they support kids who say that they're the opposite sex. Let's give them hormones to block puberty.
But let's get back to this issue of Gaza. I'm interested in Gaza and what's happened since October the 7th, that terrible massacre of Jews last year. Since then, obviously, Israel has gone into Gaza and it has declared war on Hamas, and it has killed many, many Hamas fighters. I think around 15,000, they're estimating. But they have also killed many civilians, and people are concerned around the world about this.
They're not concerned. It's a total lie.
You don't think people are concerned
about
civilian deaths?
No, I don't believe that. That is correct. I know they think they believe it. Oh, I no doubt. If they believed it, they could end it tomorrow. Hamas, do what the Nazis did. Surrender, give up, and there will not be another Gazan killed. there was a solution tomorrow, and no one advocates it. Instead, Israel, sorry, lose the war. They use civilians to shield their fighters. Why didn't anybody say in World War II, America and Britain, stop bombing the Germans? You're genocidal against the Germans. You're genocidal against the Japanese. Instead, they said, hello, Japan fascists, surrender. Hello, Nazis, surrender. And the day they surrendered, not one more German got killed. That would happen in Gaza. They care about Israel losing. They don't care about, if they cared about civilians, as I said, far more black Christians in West Africa have been killed than Gazans. And there isn't a word in the world. Do you know, I'll bet you don't know, almost no one, 500,000 people in Ethiopia, civilians mostly, have been killed in the last few years. Few years. Because of the Tigray state desire to secede from Ethiopia. 500,000. No one cares. So all of a sudden, they're great, great lovers of humanity because they care about Gazans. They care about Gazans because Jews are in the war. That's the only reason.
Do you think that there are some critiques of Israel's actions after the war that are valid? So I'll give you an example. Some British aid workers were killed in a strike.
Was it deliberate?
It wasn't deliberate, according to the... obviously, I mean, I don't think it was deliberate.
Okay, why would Israel do it deliberately? I mean, they're not stupid.
But it was definitely incompetence. And
that's no, I don't know. Well, they killed one of their own hostages. It's called friendly fire. There is no war in history that innocents have not been killed.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I want to talk again about Candice, actually, because I think it's a really interesting example of something that's happened on the right, where people have said, listen, this is about free speech. Glenn Greenwald is a great example of this, who says Daily Wire shouldn't have separated with Candice Owens. If they were applying their free speech commitment and their philosophy, then they would allow her to say whatever she liked.
I must say, I had had a growing respect for Glenn Greenwald, but that is such a stupid comment. So, because free speech does not apply when you have an ideological, let us say a Catholic college had a member, and I'm not saying that this is the Candace issue, but let's just say a Catholic college had a member of the faculty say, you know what, the Trinity is nonsense. The notion that the Pope is the vicar of Christ on earth is blasphemy. There is no vicar of Christ on earth. Does free speech oblige a Catholic college to have an anti-Catholic spokesman? Free speech applies to society and government. It doesn't apply to ideological things. The problem with the New York Times and free speech is the New York Times does not say it's ideological. Daily Wire does. The New York Times claims that it is only committed to truth. But if you say something on the right, the odds are they'll fire you, like they did the opinion editor, just for publishing one congressman who was a Republican.
But the New York Times admit they're a liberal newspaper.
No, they don't. I've never heard them admit it.
Well, if you see their editorial...
Oh, no, that's a separate issue. They'll say our editorials have nothing to do with our news pages, which, by the way, ironically, is true at the Wall Street Journal, which has conservative editorial pages, and the news pages are indistinguishable from the New York Times.
So your, nuance is that if an organization is explicitly leaning one way or the other, then they have the right to fire anyone if they
PragerU wants to advance American values, which we define, by the way, liberty, e pluribus unum, in God we trust. It's on every coin. I didn't make it up. And Judeo-Christian values, okay? So if somebody at PragerU decides America is a force for evil and since 1619, the odds are we would let that person go. Might be a wonderful person, but we have an agenda. We admit it. Now, our first agenda is truth, but you could be committed to truth and advance ideals.
But what did Candice say that was so out of step?
Okay, I don't know enough about what she has said to answer you. That's why I want to go on her show, and I have said yes to her invitation. So I can't fully answer you. There is a strand now, a strain on the right that does seem, at the very least, to have zero sympathy for Israel in its struggle to survive. And if that's true, and I say if, of Candace, that's disappointing, because I know her pretty well, and that would be difficult.
There is this weird phenomenon of someone called Nick Fuentes on the right. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yeah.
Very young man who is anti-Jew, anti-Israel. And there's this Groiper movement. I don't know if you've heard of that.
What movement?
Groiper. They're called Groipers. And no. They're kind of anti-Jew right-wingers who say that the Jews control everything and the Jews control the United States and so on. Are you concerned about this movement? And it certainly seems to be fairly popular online. If you look at Nick Fuentes, I think he has got a lot of followers and people on the so-called dissident right.
Yeah. I wrote a book on anti-Semitism many years ago. It's in its third edition. And I know the speed with which the most cultured country in the world, Germany, went from Beethoven to Auschwitz. So, and I have very little faith in humanity. I have faith in individual humans, but not in humanity. So all I could say is, to the extent that Nick Fuentes and his fellow neo-Nazis are gaining traction, is a statement about the moral decline of America, which should trouble, theoretically, everybody on the right, you would think, unless you happen to have a... The idea that Jews control, it's such a funny... I mean, it, not funny, ha-ha, just funny as in bizarre. The Jews control and then fill in a number. So let's see, Jews are 1% or whatever of the American population. So they control, that's really fascinating. So the 99% of the population of non-Jews, they're all wimps. Isn't that amazing? I've always regarded it as such an insult to Christians and to other non-Jews. You nothings. You are zilches. And anyway, what does it even mean, Jews control? What do Jews control? I would like to know, what do Jews control? The Jews control, Jews are disproportionate in Hollywood. By the way, I've noted this all of my life. Have the Jews of Hollywood ever done a damn thing for Jews or Israel? It's really, excuse me. It's really remarkable how the quote-unquote Jews do nothing for Jews. You would think that that's the first thing they would want to benefit. Name me a pro-Jewish movie since Exodus in the 1960s. So they're worthless to me as a Jew, and they're worthless to the non-Jew. By the way, here's another thing. I point this out to my listeners on my show regularly. When a Christian becomes a non-Christian, in other words, abandons Christian beliefs, he's never called a Christian. A Jew who abandons Jewish beliefs is still called a Jew. So we get stuck with the George Soroses. I loathe George Soros as much as anybody does. And he is as Jewish as you are. There's nothing Jewish about him. He loathes Israel. He loathes Judaism. He identifies nothing with it. But I'm stuck with it because his parents were Jews. That's not fair.
I have to say, that's the first time I've been compared to George Soros, and I hope the last.
Yes. Well, you're not morally comparable. You're equally Jewish. Yeah.
You may not know this, but David Cameron, our foreign secretary, and Boris Johnson were both in Washington, D.C. last week, begging Republicans to change their mind on aid for Ukraine, passing aid for Ukraine. What do you make of our politicians coming here and telling you guys what to do?
Well, actually, the biggest problem with a politician in Ukraine was, if it's accurate, Boris Johnson going the first year to Ukraine and nixing any peace talks. If that's true, that's a disgrace. Because I don't see Ukraine winning. You can't defeat Russia. There are too many people, and they don't care about their people. So I just don't see in any war, if you're having a war of attrition with Russia, you will not eventually win. In other words, at what price to Ukraine does the fighting continue? I supported from the very beginning massive aid to Ukraine. From nearly the beginning, I have supported massive peace talks. It's a human and a tragedy, a political tragedy. It is not the same as Israel, in my opinion.
Dennis Prager, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Great questions. Thank you.